You're listening to A Stranger Podcast, www.thestranger.com.
Hi, this is Jen Graves, and you're listening to Invisible, The Stranger's Weekly Conversation with People in Art. I'm at Lorimore Project with Isaac Lehman.
Hello.
He has a new show, and we're standing right now in front of an image that is, well, it's very large. And why don't you say what it is exactly?
This is a photograph of my grandmother's 1960s RCA Victor stereo. It's
seen from behind.
It's turned around with its face against the wall. So we're looking into the back area of the speakers and the vacuum tubes and the wires that connect.
If I look closely, the depth is off. And tell me how come that is. Like then I can see that I'm seeing certain things that I shouldn't be seeing, and I'm seeing things in focus that should be out of focus. And
so this is really a triptych. It looks like one single image, but there's three distinct points of view from directly in front of each the left and right speaker, and then a separate photograph in front of the middle vacuum tubes, and then on the computer I've push those pictures close enough together that it reads as one seamless image, particularly because the border of the stereo doesn't show the difference in the vantage point as much.
Mm-hmm.
So most obvious, you can see two sides of a single piece of plywood that separates the speakers.
This is like the image you made of a little bit of a bookshelf with the books turned around. And you could sort of tell at certain points in that the perspective was really off, but at first it just looked like straight up factual information, the object in the middle of the frame, very sort of, you know.
Right.
When I told you I was going to ask you how you made this, you said that it's better than asking why.
Why I made this, yeah.
So why'd you make it?
this is like for me, an exercise in awareness. While it's three different points of view, it's about 40 different pictures taken at different depths of field. The why is a compelling, because I can't help from.
Well, it has to do a little bit, I mean, the whole show has to do a little bit with, it's shot in your house.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of the anti-exotic. There's not any sort of touristic involvement with these images on your part. How did you start out? What did you do? How did you start making photographs, and when?
I took a class in high school. I wanted to take ceramics, but ceramics was full, so I had to take photography instead. And I failed that class, which is funny. I failed that class because I was in the dark room reading books. Nobody could find you because they'd have to knock on the door first, and you can hide all the books and then put it back up. But I was interested in photography. I was became interested in photography in my second photography class, which I did pass, and then was interested in photojournalism and specifically black and white photographs and darkroom technique. When I traveled a little bit and did some photojournalist kind of work, but when I got to the University of Washington, I got more interested in how pictures work than just using photography.
You actually went to Africa, didn't you?
I went to Africa
on a kind of impulse. That sort of impulse that you should go out and take pictures of something because a camera exists.
Yeah, right. The camera exists. I want to show some people some photographs, and so I bet they'll be more interesting the farther I go from home.
Homes would be island. Right?
Homes would be island. Mm-hmm. And the farther you go, the more interesting your pictures get. And I think that's, I've thought myself out of that box. I think that my work for myself is getting more interesting the less I venture from what I know and where I live. So all these pictures are taken from inside my house.
Now we're standing in front of an image of your medicine cabinet. It's also very large. And when we talked about this before we turn on the tape, we talked a little bit. You mentioned A couple of things that I wanted to ask you about. First of all, you said that your images are kind of involved in making I statements.
Yeah, there's the nod to whose point of view we're looking from, or just that there is a point of view instead of a very clean window that you can look through and decide you know, what you're going to look at. Instead, we've got things that are chosen, selected, and then presented in front of you. And I think that's, I use frames and different types of borders in my images to kind of give a nod to the recognition that this is a point of view.
Yeah, and these, in particular, this image is full of selected objects, sort of like an installation, you were saying. And it's full of selected objects presented inside several different frames. There's the frame of the photograph. There's the frame of the medicine cabinet itself. You took off the door. There are the frames of the interior shelves. All this.
There's this little jar that's a container for all the Q-tips.
Well, and in a funny way, what I think of when I think of this image is that all of these objects are also frames or holding, containing crazy materials.
Right.
If you imagine this medicine cabinet without any of the kind of holders, it just becomes a humongous, blobby, scary mess of ibuprofen and Tums and cologne and lotion and, you know, Band-Aids falling all over. But I also wanted to ask you something about your statement earlier that photographs are a good way of gossiping about people.
I think that...
And you don't want to say, you don't want to be seen as saying that you distrust photography, but you do have kind of...
Photography is not right or wrong.
Right.
It's just this thing.
But the practice of it? Tell me what you mean.
I think it's really seductive and somehow... so encouraging that when you pick up a camera to go go take a picture of somebody else or another thing and then show that to somebody else with the expectation that the object in the picture is the subject and we're learning about it. When more and more I look at pictures of my own and others, I really see I see the picture as a collection of decisions the photographer was making. And so it's so nice with painting, you kind of inherently know that. You know that the painting is a collection of brushstrokes and decisions that person made. But with photography, sometimes it's so alluring to imagine we're learning about the person in the picture. So with like this medicine cabinet, this really is a collection. It's a collection of decisions that my wife and I made on a yearly basis, day-to-day basis, to put this thing together. So it's this literal container. It's figurative, but it's an implied container of decisions we made and sort of trying to connect that to the decisions that...
you were making over the 10 hours of shooting.
Exactly, right.
So at this point, we're standing above a photograph that you made, and it's a photograph of your drawer, and it's shaped like a drawer that's been pulled out. It reminds me of earlier when we were talking. You said you don't want to make photographs that are windows onto things. You rather make a box full of shit.
Right.
And I didn't mean like literal shit, but you better make a box of shit. And this is a box of shit. A drawer from your kitchen, or
these are three drawers from my kitchen.
One in each image, so there are essentially three sort of sculptural photographs on the floor.
Right. So one of them is a little bit thinner because it was literally a thinner drawer.
Okay.
And the top drawer, it was pulled out, and it's got the silverware and the knives and all those things you don't find in the back of your drawer. So I pulled all three of these out, and they were kind of compositionally finished the moment I pulled them out. This wasn't an editing process. This was a documenting evidence. And so they're displayed back where they kind of would have been if we had just been looking at them directly out. But they're a photograph.
And this is about failure.
Everybody knows this isn't anything new. This is the idea that the camera is never going to give you the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's got a promise of it, and this one's really promising a lot because it promises you by being in the place those objects would have been. Mm-hmm. It's on the floor. We're looking down. The perspective is single perspective from the top.
Mm-hmm.
The images are presented just about life size, or just a tiny bit over. So it's about as real as I could possibly get those knives and Tupperware and the different images that are already in the. I like this piece over here at the. It's got a Ziploc. It's a Ziploc bag.
It's your baggie and foil drawer, essentially.
This is the baggie and foil drawer, and mm-hmm. I love the way that, sort of without being conscious of it, we've got the blue and yellow foil drawer, and then the silver, drawer, and the other one's all this plastic and stuff. But there's this picture. In the picture,
mm-hmm. on the Ziploc box,
with all of these things, all you know, food. There's like meat and onion and
it's a kebab.
But I like that as a kind of a nod to what photography is doing, just grabbing a bunch of stuff and skewing it, and in terms of all of its interpretations.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, you wanted to talk about this image because you said it's an even greater failure.
Yeah. whereas the drawers, the drawers take up a space that the drawer photograph takes up a space similar to what the real drawer would have taken. This is the piece we're looking at here in the white cube, titled Tilt, is a photograph tilted off the wall,
mm-hmm.
and the way it was shot and the way it's presented back in the room, it mimics what a mirror would be doing.
Mm-hmm.
Moment you look at it. Though reminiscent of the mirror, it just starts failing left and right because it can't change with where you move to, mm-hmm. like a mirror would.
Mm-hmm.
A mirror would be correct from where you
are looking
anywhere in the room.
Yeah.
Here it's just a different weirdness from wherever you are in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So there's all this effort and all of this intention and sincerity, and now we get to look at it and investigate it. Investigate its failure in terms of it can't quite be
mm-hmm.
that mirror,
mm-hmm.
and for me the implication is that there's if we analyze our vision, the way we perceive the world, we might see a lot of things that we think are correct, and actually there could be a whole lot of oddities that we weren't aware of.
Mm-hmm. So at this point, we're standing in front of a sculpture / photograph, and it's of a pool table, and this image has a funny history because it was shown in Miami, and you sort of made it with that kind of luxury culture in mind.
Right.
But you also mentioned just now that photography is the worst medium. What were you? What?
Yeah, photography is the worst of all artistic mediums. I think that's probably, and I don't think anybody could ever disagree with that.
Mm.
Absolute statements. That's what photography's good at. So this is a pool table. This is a pool table. This is a photograph of a pool table presented back to where it was. It's a horizontal picture printed one-to-one. With a high-resolution camera, so that each of the little bits of fabric and
mm-hmm.
felt will show up. But I kind of I want to take this luxury item.
And it's mounted on top of a thing shaped like a pool table.
Yeah, its
mm-hmm.
pedestal is.
Mm-hmm. When you look at it, everything is straight above.
Yeah.
Like every ball is as though you're seeing it from directly above.
Right. So the idea of that. If you stand around this, there isn't a left or a right or a top or a bottom to this thing. It's a picture without a single eye point of view,
mm-hmm.
whereas most pictures do have that. So each ball has its own point of view. So you stand behind a ball, and you understand it from your point of view, and it looks pretty correct. And as you look over to other people's, if you think of those as belonging to separate points of view,
mm-hmm.
then the strangeness
Right.
And they're all correct. None of them is wrong. But from if you choose one, the others look strange until you go and stand by that one.
Yeah.
So the a nod to multiple points of view, but also to take something that's a luxury item and a game and render that game useless, but the luxury heightened. Only thing more luxurious than a pool table would be a useless, rendered useless pool table back in the same space, occupying the same place in your den. Yeah.
And the way that this was first shown in Miami, and kind of because of that, I can't help but think of it as a kind of critique of Miami, of not Miami the city, but the fair.
Yeah.
And reminds me of the kind of gamesmanship that's all over this work and the show and the way that it's sort of a critique of the medium and you know, this kind of play inside a given field, you know, the field being photography, the field being vision, and having a look at, you know, kind of what how you're looking, you know, which is It's sort of a ground clearing. This show feels like to me. This is your first show, first big show here, right?
Yeah. I'm also thinking of like art as recreation and art as escapist instead of a mode to information and greater understanding. There's at times it's an escape. You can sort of entertain yourself with art. Yeah, I mean, because I love Miami and I love Basel.
Why?
Why? Because it's so many people endeavoring. There's so many people offering up their efforts and their wares, and I think that's really endearing.
It's a very earnest way to look at it.
No, and I love that.
And I've never heard of Basel as described as endearing, but it's really great.
I love it. I love it. But and so this is sort of this grand, for me, grand gesture of the game, and it could be a beautiful game. And this pool table, not only you being unusable, there's only striped balls on the table. The balls have been oriented in a particular way to make them aesthetically pleasing, more than, absolutely more than useful. So it's really, when you look at this, it's hard to know exactly what game is being played, since it's not pool.
What's this called?
This is titled Picture Framing Glass, and it's a photograph, it's a color photograph of a pane of glass used to frame artwork, photographed on two pieces of white foam core. And in this piece, the color photograph in this frame is behind the actual piece of glass that was in the photograph. Does that make sense? I was kind of a acknowledgement of the romanticized or idealized or represented thing being more appealing, more beautiful, sought after than the actual thing actually, you know, ever is. So we look past the pane of glass that's truly in front of us at its more idealized, improved, more beautiful self.
The same pane of glass is a totally different pane of glass when you frame it and call it,
Right. And that's just I think it's something that happens with whenever you make something.
It's also a closed system in a way, because you signed it because it's hard to say this out loud, but it's the way that, you know, photographs are seen as sort of endlessly replicable.
Right, this is a unique object.
Yeah, this is just one, because it has to be with the very pane of glass that's in the photograph.
Right. And if...
So it ends that chain.
I actually made the print once before and damaged it and had to make a new picture. Mm-hmm. I had to make a new print. And if that had happened with the glass itself, I couldn't have finished the piece. So it was interesting having the reproduced image being secondary to this thing that we're really just looking past.
So after all this talking about kind of photography and the worst medium and art and these sort of self-contained games, there's an element of kind of mental masturbation to the whole thing, which I'm not knocking. Mm-hmm. But this piece is a little different. It's different, first of all, in that it's a video and not a photograph. But it is really a video that's both about photography, and it also seems to have a real sort of tender affect. And it's also a landscape. Can you tell me what it is?
So this is a mattress that was left out for free across the street from my Seattle home where all these pictures are taken. And it had this beautiful blue, it's actually a box spring that goes under the mattress and has this beautiful blue surface to it and this very picture framing art border, like it has its own frame, mm-hmm. which is the quilted fabric around the edge. Mm-hmm. I brought this back, not knowing what I was going to do with it, and I set it up against my house, and as I was working on the show, I'd walk by this piece and see the reflection of, not the reflection, the shadow of the apple tree behind where the camera is here. Cloud cover would pass in front of the sun, and so it would cast these shadows, and the shadows fade and then come back forward and retreat in the way that images in the darkroom do, in the developing tray. Mm-hmm. In the developing tray, it would come up and then turn totally black if you just let it continue to develop. Mm-hmm. And here it does sort of that and then starts over again. And actually, it's in this room because it's I like the notion of time, mm-hmm. kind of breath that this mm-hmm. elicits, connected to the self-portrait where I'm sleeping for 4.5 minutes. So both of these have to do with time.
Are you really sleeping?
I'm literally sleeping.
You were really sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah, it was really late at night, and I had finished something else, and I turned the camera around, turned the lights around, and then sat in the chair and started the picture to be taken. Mm-hmm. So this is actually a longer period of time than this.
Photograph is a longer period of time than the video.
Right.
And the result is that the edges of your pockets are scalloped because of your breathing.
Right, exactly.
Now, that reminds me that the reason that that effect comes up is because of technology. What is the technology you're using?
I'm using a scanning camera that goes in the back of a 4x5. Like where you used to put film, you put this, it's basically a film scanner, and it takes one pixel, 8,000 pixels in a vertical line, and then drags it across where the film would have been and puts the picture together that way. Mm-hmm. So in asleep 4.5 minutes, as I breathe, that line of pixels is, the line of pixels are recording the image. And so as my chest rises and falls with the breath, it changes the look of those mm-hmm. pockets mm-hmm. and gives it that scalloped mm-hmm. rise and fall.
There's a lot of emphasis, you know, on process and on technology, not for technology's sake, but certainly the awareness of what it does, that you're not mm-hmm. just using one shot, you know, you're layering mm-hmm. a lot of shots, or you're using a camera that captures one pixel at a time, and therefore the subject is actually changed because of the mm-hmm. time. You know, I'm wondering, and, you know, this we had talked about a little earlier, that the idea of this, or I had said that this show seems to me to be, you know, a ground clearing. This is about photography, and this is almost a teaching you how to look, and teaching me how to look at your work, you know, not me, mm-hmm. but, you know.
I would say, though, that not just, there's an awareness of photography, and I feel like that's important to make that nod, mm-hmm. but I have a real heartfelt sincerity and affection for these objects and these places in my life. So, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. which I think, you know, and that's why I've put two self-portraits in here.
I think that comes through in the video. I think it really comes through in the video. And you fight against that by using a white background in your other ones that make them look clinical.
Right.
They're highly unsentimental images, except this one.
It's, yeah. Yeah, I'm not really trying to go sentimental.
Right.
In that stuff, I'm just trying to, for lack of a better description, like force my eyes as wide open as I possibly can for a long period of time and just absorb in detail the fullness of one of these places or containers like the sink or the stereo.
Mm-hmm. What do you think you're going to do next? I mean, there's a sense, I have the sense of you behind the camera being really prepared and really having a very clear sense of what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about what's going to change in front of the camera. Because now you have photographed your whole house, basically.
I've got a lot more to photograph.
In your house?
In my house. but I do, you know, I've been on, as I look back, 10 years or so now, I can see myself, I can see that my interests in what I want to photograph are getting closer and closer to my physical proximity and where I live. So whether it was travel and go off into the world and take pictures and bring them home, I'm just taking pictures in my home, of my home. And I wonder if that'll, in some of this most recent work, I'm now looking at my own self-portrait. And instead of using some of these different objects as a stand-in, kind of for
information about you,
going directly and using some, although I don't know, we'll have to see.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to get more and more personal, because I think that's kind of the only person I feel like I should talk about.
Mm. Thanks for taking so much time.
My pleasure, thank you.
You've been listening to Invisible.